Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. The first two updates I have for you this week are in regards to the two conferences that I attended last week, and I was doing enough travel that I actually didn't get a chance to do a podcast last week. The first conference that I attended was SCALE, which is the Southern California Area Linux Expo, and it was another fantastic SCALE. Last year was the first year I had attended that expo. Elon and the entire crew once again did an absolutely remarkable job. The speakers were again superb, and I learned quite a bit. It's a fairly technical expo, which is one thing I like about it. And I also got a few good laughs out of some of the presentations. It's not as business-oriented, so they'll work in a little comedy also, which is good. The slides and audio actually are going to all be posted up at the SCALE site soon. They weren't when I checked late last night. When they are, I highly recommend you check them out. I actually did make it out of the hotel this year. Last year I never left the hotel, which is right at LAX, but it was only for dinner, so I still have not actually been to LA proper either of the years. The after conference was once again lively in the hotel lobby bar, and it was great to be able to both catch up with some people I haven't seen in a while and also meet some really good people for the first time. And SCALE is one of the expos that I do plan to attend yearly, so I do look forward to SCALE 6. The next expo that I did, actually this one was a summit, was the Linux World Open Solutions Summit. And this was a first-time show. It's put on by Linux World and IDG. They had just never done the Open Solutions Summit before. And all in all, it was a good show. The Ask the Experts panel, which I participated in, was the first unconference-style event that they had in the Linux World. And I'm happy to report that based on this one, they will likely move forward with future ones, which obviously I'm glad to hear. The first day, we did more of a speaker approach. The second day was a little bit more conversational in approach, and I really think the second day from an approach style worked a little bit better. I'm not sure how they're going to proceed with that, but there is even some talk of some remote live video questions being an option for the future, and I do think that would be really cool. Just like SCALE, I once again met a good bunch of people, caught up with some people I hadn't seen in a while, and I got a chance to chat with Evan about OpenID, and he's the one who wrote the OpenID extension for MediaWiki, which is what we use at the LQ Wiki. And I'm happy to announce we're going to be moving ahead and rolling that out in the very near future. I would say by next month at the latest, could even be sooner. While I wasn't on the Ask the Experts panel, I was able to sneak away and attend a couple of the sessions. They're not quite as technical as SCALE. This was definitely a business summit. But the content was still very good, and in walking around the actual expo part of the summit, the traffic wasn't as high as some of the Linux World. It was a smaller event, but pretty much universally, all the vendors said that the traffic that they did get was high quality, very good traffic, and people were really happy with the event, which is amazing because the weather in New York was terrible. A bunch of people's flights were canceled, including at least two people who were supposed to be on the Ask the Experts panel weren't able to make it. So I'm sure attendance was heavily impacted by that. Microsoft actually threw a reception on the first night of the hotel, which was fairly well attended, and it was on the 49th floor of the Marquee, which rotates around and has just an amazing view of the city, so that was a good time. And I definitely look forward to being able to participate in the on-conference Ask the Experts panel if they do it again, and would like to thank Don for having me. Last LQ update I have is the 2006 LinuxQuestions.org Members Choice Award winners have been announced. And the polls are closed, the data has been audited, and as I said, the results are in. And a big congratulations here goes to all the projects that were nominated this year. We once again had a record turnout with just shy of 30,000 votes cast, so a thank you is definitely also in order for the LQ members who make initiatives like this a huge success at LQ. For the winners, a certificate and a site badge was mailed out yesterday, so if you are a winner and you didn't get that due to a spam filter or something like that, do let me know and I can resend it to a different address. As always, the full results will be available at www.linuxquestions.org/awards, and we keep those available until basically the nominees for next year are announced, so they will be available for quite some time. And as with most polls, a number of the winners were fairly easy to guess ahead of time, and this isn't a super, super scientific poll. It's in some ways a popularity contest, and of course, it's only indicative of what the LQ community thinks, and in many ways, I think we are a very good representation of the overall Linux community. There are definitely some edge cases where, just as an example, because we are a semi-official Slackware forum, we have a bigger contingent of Slackware voters than, I'm sure, in the general bigger Linux community. But those things aside, I really do think we're fairly indicative, like I said, and we do tend to audit things pretty closely. So I think there is some credence to the stats, especially when you take into account how things look over multiple years in a row. This is the sixth time we've done these, so it is interesting to see how things have gone up and down in those 6 years. Now, many polls this year were closer than in past years, and I think that's really indicative of the increasing number of quality projects that open source is putting out. And the number of those quality projects out there is just really, really impressive. I think potentially the biggest surprise in looking at the results for me this year was how close Beryl came to beating Fluxbox in the window manager. But then I had a quick look after that at Google Trends and compared some of the popular window managers, and Beryl has skyrocketed there also in the recent past, so maybe it shouldn't have been as big a surprise as it was. So as always, if you have any questions about the results or the methodologies or any feedback, please do let me know. Now, on to the news. The first story I have is Free Linux Driver Development Questions and Answers. And this is actually just a quick follow-up to something I covered previously on the podcast. And it's wonderful to see that Greg's Linux Driver announcement that he did got so many responses that he had to end up writing a FAQ and posting it to his blog. And I'm just going to highlight one point from that FAQ. Quote, question, this is a lame publicity stunt. Linux development has always been done this way. Answer, well, the NDA program that we have set up with the Linux Foundation is new. But yes, other than that, this is exactly how Linux kernel development has been done. But it's good to point out exactly how it all works for those who are not familiar with how it all works. End quote. And I think when you do this day in and day out, especially for a long time, it's sometimes too easy to forget that things you take for granted are not really common knowledge in the greater community. And it's important to take a step back sometimes and kind of get that perspective on things. So kudos to Greg for doing that, and fabulous to see that it was such a success that he needed to write that FAQ. The next story I have is Novell Microsoft Pact, not about interoperability, says open source leader. And Don Marty recently posted an outstanding interview with Jeremy Allison of the Samba project. And one item covered in the article was rumors that some companies have been paying Microsoft for patent licensing to cover their use of open source, even previous to the recent Novell deal. And here's a quote from that interview. Linux World. One of the persistent rumors that's going around is that certain large IT customers have already been paying Microsoft for patent licensing to cover their use of Linux, Samba, and other free software projects. And the Novell deal, isn't it just taking that and doing the same kind of thing wholesale? Allison, yes, that's true actually. I mean, I have had people come up to me and essentially off the record admit that they had been threatened by Microsoft and had got patent cross-licensing and had essentially taken out a license for Microsoft patents on the free software that they were using, which they then cannot redistribute. I think that would be a restriction. I'd have to look quite carefully. So essentially that's not allowed. But they're not telling anyone about it. They're completely doing it off the record. The problem with the Novell deal is, Novell gave Microsoft what Microsoft dearly wanted, which is a public admission that they think that Linux violates the Microsoft patent. So, that's the difference between this and the sort of off-the-record quiet deals. This one is public. This one is Novell admitting, yes, we think that Linux violates Microsoft patents. Now, of course, Novell has come out and said, no, that's not what we said at all. We don't think that. To which, of course, Microsoft publicly humiliated them and said, oh yes, that's really what you were saying. It's kind of funny. They couldn't even wait until the press conference was over to start threatening users with a Linux system. Linux World? Watching Novell management being subjected to this was like watching a child eating a bug for money. It's embarrassing. Allison, it's humiliating. I was horrified to say it was humiliating. Yes, it really is like, go on, eat a bug. Go on. Here's some money, eat a bug. Yes, sad but true. End quote. Now, I have to admit this wasn't something that I had heard a lot about. But you have to hope that it's untrue, at least in a way. If we're talking about public companies here, I don't think shareholders would look too kindly on paying potentially large sums of money to Microsoft under the table for highly questionable reasons. And we'll have to see if some concrete evidence and numbers on this surfaces. And if it does, you could potentially even expect a lawsuit. The interview covers a variety of topics, including Jeremy stepping down from Novell, his recent work on CIFS, some patent talk, additional Microsoft coverage, and even some talk on burritos. Additionally, there is some really good GPLv3 commentary, including some common misconceptions and one that I'll admit to have fallen prey to in the past. So I do recommend that you go check it out. The next story I have, which is related to that, is Ballmer repeats threats against Linux. Now, Novell execs must absolutely cringe when they see things like this, and this is from a recent ZDNet article. Quote, Steve Ballmer has reissued Microsoft's patent threat against Linux, warning open-source vendors that they must respect his company's intellectual property. In a no-nonsense presentation to New York financial analysts last week, Microsoft's chief executive said the company's partnership with Novell, which is signed in November of 2006, demonstrated clearly the value of intellectual property, even in the open source world. The cross-selling partnership means that Microsoft will recommend SUSE Linux for its customers who want a mixed Microsoft open source environment. It also involves a patent cooperation agreement under which Microsoft and Novell agreed not to sue each other's customers for patent infringement. In a clear threat against open source users, Ballmer repeated his earlier assertions that open source is not free, referring to the possibility that Microsoft may sue Linux vendors. Microsoft has suggested that Linux software infringe some of its intellectual property, but has never named the patents in question. Ballmer said, I would not anticipate that we make a huge additional revenue stream from our Novell deal, but I do think it clearly establishes that open source is not free, and open source will have to respect the intellectual property rights of others, just as any other competitor will. End quote. He really almost makes it sound like the actual value to Microsoft, and really the real intention of the agreement, was simply to posture for further protection money from other vendors. And I wonder how Novell feels about this in retrospect. In a good post on his blog, Matt Acey asked, Steve Ballmer, was this the friend Novell wanted? And I think the answer to that is clear now, and it's a no. I still wonder if Microsoft realistically thinks that they can sue. The amount of potential litigation that this could just get thrown back at them pretty much immediately, it really is substantial. If they're going to go after a Linux vendor, Red Hat seems to be one of the more likely targets. But don't forget that the likes of IBM depend on Linux for large chunks of their consulting money, and Red Hat is obviously one of their two big partners in that. I'd say it's even more interesting now that Oracle is selling what is in essence a RHEL clone, so they're also pretty tied to Red Hat. At this point in the game, I wonder how effective this kind of fudge-slinging really is anyways. Now, a few years ago, many people were fooled by things like this, but these days, that's certainly changing, and IT departments really are much more educated about these things than they had been in the past. Ballmer, it would seem, is not changing with the times. And it's unfortunate because I think some parts of Microsoft really are making an attempt to do so. The next story I have is the Dell Idea Storm. Dell recently released what they're calling the Idea Storm, where your ideas reign. And basically what it is a dig-like site where you can submit ideas and feedback, and others in the Dell community can then vote on them. And I'm not quite sure Dell knew what it was getting into. And the top ideas, as of yesterday, in order, were 1. Pre-installed Linux, Ubuntu, Fedora, OpenSUSE, Multiboot. 2. Pre-installed OpenOffice and alternatives to Microsoft Works and Microsoft Office. 3. A no extra software option. 4. A Linux laptop. 5. No OS preloaded. 6. Have Firefox pre-installed as the default browser. And 7. Build computers not loaded with extra software. So when you really break it down, 5 of the top 7 suggestions have to do directly with open source, and the other 2, which really are the same exact suggestion worded differently, has to do with the amount of preload junk that people just don't want. The thing here is, Dell has always said that there was no real demand for Linux or even a no OS option. While the demographic of a person that's going to use a site like IdeaStorm clearly skews things a bit towards the more technical, the no demand issue is clearly no longer much of an issue. Additionally, I've seen it claimed multiple times that Windows ended up being cheaper than Linux for an OEM like Dell as a result of all the money they get from companies wanting to preload their software on Windows. And this is the stuff like AOL and Earthlink and the myriad free trials. If you see some of these OEM PCs on first boot, it's shocking how much stuff is on the desktop. However, it's clear that consumers just don't want this stuff. So the question now becomes, will Dell listen? And if they do, what will the repercussions be on the current OEM stranglehold that Microsoft has? If Dell starts to offer Linux as just a checkbox option on all of its models, which is what we're really looking for here, we don't want a single Linux option that can only come on this one machine. We want it to just be an OS drop-down, Windows, Linux, and whatever else. At that point, it's only a matter of time until others vendors follow suit. If Dell does it, the other big ones pretty much have to. The really good news here from my perspective is that some of the very latest crop of Linux releases are actually ready for primetime desktop use for what I think is the first time. And things like Compiz and Barrel and XGL are one piece of that puzzle, but just the small bits of polish are what have been missing, and they really are here now. Now, to be clear, we still need to get through some codec issues and things like that, but some distributions even have that sorted out, much to the chagrin of some in the Linux community. So this should get really interesting in the near future, I think. I did have a couple more stories for you because things had kind of piled up because I didn't do a podcast last week, but we're just about to approach the 20-minute mark, and I really try to keep it in between 15 and 20 minutes, so I'm going to cut it off here for now. I may do either an additional podcast or slowly add more stories in and make them a little longer over the coming weeks to make up for it, but that is all I have for now. And thanks for listening.